All right, guys. So there are three societies in Fury Road that were built on different scarce resources: water, gas, and ammunition. If you founded a post-apocalyptic society, what would be your signature resource?
Snacks. Like, you're going to tell me that in the world where water, gas, and ammunition, you're not going to want to, like, just dip in and get, like, a Hostess cupcake or Twizzlers or Chex Mix. That stuff will attract everyone.
2 points, Michael. James?
I'm going to go with pants. Just a nice pair of slacks. Not a lot of those going around, you know?
Okay.
Maybe a shirt. Maybe I'll invest in just clothing in general.
Well, you should really focus on one thing.
You think?
That's one
point. Okay, I'm going to go with slacks.
1 point, James.
Okay.
All right, you guys have the elements of a great road trip. You've got the gasoline, the pants, crucial element, the snacks. What are you going to watch? I'm going to have videotapes because you can watch them in your car.
Steven, minus 2 points.
All right, I take it with pride. I don't have VCRs, though. That's up to you.
God, you're the worst. Hello and welcome to FWAR, the podcast dedicated to taking you out from under the rock on movies you should have seen by now. What were you thinking not seeing Mad Max Fury Road by now?
Did you just say Bad Max?
I said Mad Max.
Okay.
But I gave it the Spanish inflection.
He's bad in like...
Because in Spanish,
Mad Max.
B and Mad. M.
Are the same.
Right? As like, you were saying, right?
When you're trying to say million in Spanish, it really gets...
Billion.
Billion. How much?
A billion. Un billion.
Michael, minus a billion points.
Whoa.
But just a million, actually.
Oh.
Okay.
But like the Spanish million, like un mil, which is really like a thousand.
Seriously, minus 2 points.
Okay.
I'm Ryan Evans.
I'm Steven Zurita.
I'm Michael Ornelas.
I'm James McAnally.
And and once again, I have made you guys see a movie that is still out in theaters, but I truly believe that you should have seen it by now. That was, you know, if you listen to last week's podcast, I was truly surprised when all three of you said you hadn't seen this movie.
I'm meaning to.
By the way, you're not the first one who had been like, you haven't seen it by now to me. Mm-hmm. Like, you actually have a valid point for despite it being in theaters. Because when I picked the one in theaters, It Follows, it was because to me it will be a future cult classic.
And then I was all like...
You lifting a rock over there?
I was pulling this rock out from on top of you, Michael. Get out of there.
I thought he was taking shit.
Like it under here. There's shade. That's about it. That's
not much
that's
shade.
The main appeal.
Not much shade on the Fury Road, though.
No.
None.
There's
one tree. One tree.
Yes. The one
that's
thing.
That's your shade. And they toppled it over.
Yet zero people were sunburnt in that movie.
They were.
Maybe it's that white stuff that they wear. On the War Boys.
The Smeagles.
The Smeagles, yeah.
Yeah, okay, can we talk about that? I guess we're hopping into it.
Yeah.
The War Boys are like...
They are Smeagol.
Albino-looking things, but the one main
Have you ever
guy,
seen an albino, Steve?
No. Not a post-apocalyptic one. Nux is, I think,
They would
the
not
one.
Survive long in on the Fury Road.
Played
it?
By...
Nicholas Holt.
His skin tone seems to get more and more pigmented later on in the movie.
Well, because it's paint.
Yeah. Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, because I was so confused because it was like an entire society. I was like, oh.
Or it's like chalk or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like
and is that chrome that they're spraying on? Okay.
Chrome right. spray paint.
That was one of my questions.
Dust, Steven. God.
So, sorry, just to preface a little bit, Mad Max Fury Road is a movie that came out in 2015.
For a future view.
Literally just like weeks ago.
Directed by George Miller, who also wrote and directed the original Mad Max trilogy.
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The original was made, it was an Australian cult classic starring Mel Gibson. It was kind of one of his earlier defining roles, I think. And it grew in popularity by word of mouth, and then they came out with the big budget Hollywood sequel Road Warrior, which is considered to be the best of the original trilogy and actually a pretty decent movie.
He also directed Happy Feet.
That's
and
true.
Babe.
Yeah,
I saw those influences.
So apparently, yeah. George Miller had been trying to get Fury Road made, like pretty much since Beyond Thunderdome came out.
Mm-hmm.
He's always loved the series, and he's always had all these grand ideas for it. But I don't know what the circumstances were.
I read it was in development hell for a while, at least 98. And then after a certain point, when the Mel Gibson meltdown happened, he said, okay, well, we can't have him in this. And that's actually really interesting to me, because I'm at this point where I'm like, I'm really getting tired and done with sequel and reboot all over the place. So I was like, oh, they're bringing back this old movie from the 70s. But then I looked it up. It's like the original director has been trying to get this movie made for like 15, 20 years.
Well, like, basically just like, you know, nobody's going to direct this. If anybody's going to direct another Mad Max movie, it's going to be me.
Yeah.
You know, like, it can't be anybody else. Because it's like,
and this isn't a reboot. It's a loose continuation of that
sort
same.
Of
technically
kind of reboot. You know,
technically it is a sequel, though. Yes, we have Tom Hardy in the Max role instead of Mel Gibson,
for a couple obvious reasons. Mel Gibson's pretty old, and then that whole meltdown thing you want to distance himself from.
But I heard that Tom Hardy did actually go and seek out Mel Gibson and ask him permission to play the role.
That's cool.
So he still, you know, has a great amount of venerance for the original role.
Well, what I heard was that Tom Hardy actually wanted to apologize after the fact, after filming and after all that, to George Miller, because he felt like there might have been some miscommunication or something like that. Like, he felt like on set, he felt like George Miller was, I guess, either detached or wasn't communicating as well as he thought he should to his actors. But I think later on, like after having seen the first like screening of the movie, he realized that he owed George Miller an apology, and also realized that I think it was just, he had so many, you know, he had creative control over everything and he was spread so thin. Mm-hmm. At least that's the way I understand it.
I can see that happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I really think that Miller was, you know, just letting Tom Hardy in on this small facet of the bigger picture that he was, you know, he had all the gears turning and he had everything under control. And I guess Tom Hardy, you know, not to anything against the guy, I don't, of course, know him personally, but it seems like he can be a little bit of a diva.
Really?
I hear on set he gets a little intense and angry sometimes.
That's why they keep putting masks on him to.
Yeah,
they're trying to muzzle him.
But yeah, I do think in the months leading up to this movie's actual release, the actors knew that they had something special in their hands.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about the director a little bit, and more specifically,
we have already, so we can move on.
More specifically, the finished product. I feel he was definitely the right choice to do it. I haven't seen the original trilogy. I was going to try and watch it this week, but I didn't have time. But watching this movie felt like it was straight out of the 80s, just with updated effects. And I mean that in the best way, because this is definitely, I feel the action genre was at its strongest in like the 80s and early 90s. Mm-hmm. And this felt right at home there, just with more updated visuals. And it had the camp that you kind of needed to have in a few key moments. All the things that make 80s action movies great, this movie had. And I think that's why so many fall flat nowadays and why this one worked so well.
Well, you say that everything, you know, like as far as 80s movies went, like it had everything. I feel like one thing it may have lacked actually was that sort of macho mentality that so many 80s movies seem to have, with like the huge hulking protagonist. I'm thinking particularly of Arnold Schwarzenegger, and just and him being the focal point of everything, when really it felt like
it's about Furiosa.
Yeah.
Well, I was about to say, you did have that, but it's in the form of Furiosa, but she is such an ass kicker.
Yeah.
It's definitely not lacking. It's just not in the role that you expect.
Right.
Yeah. They kind of misdirect you. Before I go into that, Ryan, can you like give us a brief synopsis of the plot of this movie? Just so people know what we're talking about.
So yes. So we have this guy, Max, played by Tom Hardy, as we said, who he lives in this post-apocalyptic world, and there's a brief intro that kind of gives you a sense of why this world is plunged into chaos. It's nothing too specific, though, and it's really not that important.
It doesn't need to be.
But the world that Max lives in is basically, you know, sparsely populated desert where your vehicle is your main source, is your livelihood, basically, and gasoline is the most valuable resource on the planet. And so Max gets thrown into this kind of chaotic situation, this society that's built around water. They are, you know, the main, that water is their main good for trading purposes.
Right.
And it's led by this sort of cultish mythological figure named Immortan Joe, who, interestingly, was also the bad guy in the original Mad Max movie. Same actor.
Oh, cool.
And so,
different character, though, right?
Different character, yes. Okay. Same actor. And so Max, you know, for the first half hour or so of the movie, he's kind of a bystander. And he gets thrown into the mix of Furiosa's plot to liberate Immortan Joe's, his he calls them breeders, basically these hot women that he likes to sleep with and
impregnate.
He's trying to make a perfect heir because everyone in his society is irradiated and deformed. Even right. his own other children are kind of gross to look at.
Yeah.
And so Furiosa's on the run. Max is pulled along for the ride, and the chase is on. And again, the plot is really
it's very simple.
Yeah, it's not that complicated. I think I actually made it sound more complex than it actually is. But all that stuff is, you know, it's never told to you explicitly. It's just kind of laid out in the visual exposition, basically, you know?
Well, it's, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's essentially a gigantic chase sequence, the whole movie, which I'm not sure if I've actually seen done before. Maybe in something slipping my mind, but like I was watching the movie and I was like, I don't think I've ever seen something like a movie that encompasses one long chase.
Which is really a brilliant device because you can raise the stakes by just being like, oh, we're stalled.
Yeah, and they're coming.
And just as an audience member, you feel anxiety immediately that they want you to feel.
Get up
like
and go, get up and go.
It's such a simple way to manipulate your audience into like feeling for your movie.
It was funny when you originally described this as like a long chase scene, and I was like, oh, to me that was like off-putting. Like I thought it was going to be like literally 100%. I was like, oh, I would get so bored.
Just guys making that sound.
No, but it was.
Turns out, the entire movie is just a child playing with cars.
Max, wow, they really lowered their standards. No, but it still had like those like valleys and hills that a movie has where it's like, all right, intense. Okay, we're going to slow it down a little bit. Intense, slow it down.
Well, it couldn't be all punch all the time.
No, well, I had interpreted it as this movie is just on 100%. But like, no, it had those times for you to catch your breath, which was nice. And then also visually, like, you know, the colors are really saturated in your face with like the reds and the yellows with the desert.
This whole movie is orange and blue.
Yeah. Nighttime and it's blue. I was like, oh, my eyes get a chance to relax a little bit, reset. And then we're back into it the day after.
I think that was entirely on purpose.
Oh, for sure.
I remember reading a study somewhere that said orange and blue are the most marketable colors.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's all over Michael Bay movies.
Yeah. And, you know, you'll just see a collection of random movie posters and like, oh, these are all blue with orange highlights. You know, it's all the same kind of
color.
We're looking at Back to the Future up here. So they knew that even back in the 80s.
I've actually proposed to our group several times that we just changed the thumbnail of our podcast to be a fruit of an orange just in a pool, because I think that would sell really well.
What hot are we, and cold right
Pearl
there.
Pearl Jam?
Yeah. I don't understand it.
Oh, I got it. The baby with the dollar bill is the orange.
That's Nirvana.
Oh, sorry, never mind.
Didn't get it at all.
Nope.
So yeah, we talked about how this is Furiosa's movie, mm-hmm. kind of, how Max is just kind of a bystander, especially for the first half hour. And that's in keeping in tradition with the previous Mad Maxes as well.
Oh, really?
Where he's kind of like the companion?
Yeah. Well, especially Road Warrior is the one I saw the most recently. And he's very much just, you know, he's on the road, he's out looking for gas, and then he comes across this town that has a ton of gas. And
oh, that's got a smell.
And they're like...
That's how they're like.
And they're like, Max, we need your help. We're about to be decimated by this rival gang. And they're like, and Max is like, well, I don't really want to, but if you give me a ton of gas, then I guess.
Oh, really? Yeah. So like all the Mad Max movies are, he kind of just stumbles on these situations.
Kinda, yeah.
Because that was, I mean, I guess if it's the tradition of it, it's not as much of a complaint. But as someone who's only seen this one movie, I was like, oh, he doesn't have a big stake in the matter. He's not a really active protagonist. Like, this stuff's just happening around him, and where else is he going to go? He has to stick with this war rig, so
I viewed
might as
him,
well make it work.
I viewed him as the classic video game RPG protagonist. He is the audience's view into the world around. Mm-hmm. So
this setting would be a great... I'm sure there are already a lot of video games, but this would be a really cool video game setting.
Well, they're making a Mad Max video game.
Yeah.
It doesn't look that good.
But it's probably not like an RPG. Like,
Fallout
it's,
4,
no,
you.
It's an action game.
Like,
there is Fallout 4.
There could be, I mean, just make it a lot about resources and traveling war gangs and customizing your sweet ride. That's a game right there.
So, yeah, I saw this movie back in September, October-ish of last year.
Really?
And
Fury Road?
Fury Road, yes. For a test screening, and I remember the, you know, I was just raving on my comment card.
Yeah.
But the one thing I said was, Max is just kind of a bystander for the first half hour. So I definitely agree with you, Steven, that it's still, even though it is a tradition, it's still not like, it might not be the best.
Yeah, I kind of felt like by the time I figured out Furiosa's, like the active one, she's the one's like, I'm taking this war rig off trail and we're tricking them. And you know, that is like 20, 30 minutes in, and it kind of felt like, as cool as his, you know, first action scenes were, trying to escape the war boys and all, and he's swinging on that big crane hook and everything, I was like, oh, well, that actually didn't contribute too much to the story. It was cool, but, you know, Furiosa is not introduced for later.
If he got away from that group of war boys with that crane in the first, like, couple of minutes, I was like, that would be a literal deus ex machina, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, because the crane just kind of appears.
Yeah.
I was what is that crane even doing there?
1 point, James.
Oh, yeah. Got one.
Having said all that, though, the first 20 or 30 minutes of this movie is some of the best 20 or 30 minutes that I've ever seen in a movie.
I had a comment about, I was riveted, and I think it's just due to the intensity. Like, the war boys all chasing him as he's, like, trying to escape. They're coming at him with like such speed and intensity that you're like watching and like genuinely like they are vicious in their pursuit. And it reminded me of the Dawn of the Dead remake, which was, I believe, the first zombie movie that had fast zombies in it.
Mm-hmm.
Although maybe 28 Days Later.
It's one of those two.
But just something like just a barrage of something 100% focused on harming you, like going as hard as it can to catch you. Like, you don't have time to relax. Like, I was feeling it.
Well, it's the literal speed of, like, the threat that's approaching. But I feel like it's also the speed of the editing and how they make use of fast motion.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, like, while I was watching the movie, I was actively thinking about, like, the editing and the sound effects and just how it keeps you, you know, you've got these sound effects blaring in your ear and you've got this fast paced editing and people talking and it's just so chaotic. It actually reminded me of Baz Luhrmann's editing style where it's just like, you know, you maybe get 2-3 frames of a shot and then you're on to the next one. And like they're messing with slow-mo, regular speed. I'm not saying that this is anything like what he may have directed, but
I was about to say I would not have thought of that comparison.
From an editing standpoint, not necessarily from a directing standpoint, although it does definitely have that visual splendor going on as well.
You see, I didn't even think of the editing, which is a sign of good editing. Mm. It's just, I was totally immersed.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to confirm this. My phone is being wonky right now, but I heard that it was actually George Miller's wife that edited this movie.
Really?
And that she hadn't had any experience editing action movies beforehand.
Wow.
Yeah.
But she had done editing before on other stuff?
I
would think she would have to.
Maybe a plus, because she won't fall back into conventions.
Exactly, yeah.
That she's just used to doing. She won't go through the motions. She will be more original. And I felt it was originally edited for an action movie. Mm. It was so, like, I guess, yeah, I said it before, vicious is the, like, that pursuit of the Breeders and Furiosa. Mm-hmm. Was relentless,
and it's such like a such a visceral sort of world that they built, that George Miller built, where there's a line where Furiosa is like asking the Breeders like how are you doing, and or how's your leg after one of them gets shot, kind of mm-hmm. grazed more than anything, and the Breeder says it hurts, and she's like, everything hurts out here, and like throughout the movie. I sort of felt like, just God, what, like, chapped lips and skin and just like everything sunburnt, and like it just felt like such a painful world.
Yeah.
And like you could feel it.
Cars.
You know? Everything about it is hard and rough and, you know, coarse.
Yeah.
And you can feel it just watching.
And then it takes place in sand, which is associated with all those adjectives as well. Like, yeah.
You're not like sand. Sand is
coarse.
I was waiting for it. Y'all get a point for me. I was waiting for
that. Y'all get a point, which counts for nothing this round.
No, I'm not giving anyone a point for that.
Not like everything here. Everything here is smooth, and he says something else.
Soft
and smooth.
I had something I wanted to bring up. The fact that it was a chase scene can get very claustrophobic, and they did a great job with making it feel like there were different sets. And specifically, the one that I was most impressed with was how open they made the rig feel, because mm-hmm. it had so many parts that they're able to move around from.
Main cabin.
You have the main cabin, but even still, like, the driver's seat and the back seat feel like their own mm-hmm. separate set pieces. Mm-hmm. And then
undercarriage.
You have all the undercarriage, the top, the
fuel pod.
The fuel thing at the back.
The lookout. Post.
Yeah, there's like a whole little intimate scene there with one of the wives
with Nux.
Yeah. And that's like the one soft, because you're talking about how rough this movie is, soft scene. Like, she like kind of like grazes his face a little bit, and you realize, like, you know, this is probably like the first woman he's ever seen.
Yeah, and he handles it surprisingly well.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I'm surprised he's not going crazy over these women.
Yeah, but like, I was just so impressed with their use of every bit of space that they could squeeze out of these fairly small set. Like, even the car that Nux is dragging Max on when he's a blood bag and they're chasing the rig. You know, you have the guy who's kind of like the turret, and then they go into the storm. And then you have, like, so you have the front where Max is kind of displayed helplessly. You have the driver's cabin you have on top of that, and you have in back. And they managed to make that feel like a big set piece. And it's a tiny car.
Yeah. Well, when people are like clambering all over the top of it, you know, you've got different areas to work with.
Right.
They use a lot more of the car than any of us do. Like, no one would ever think, let's strap a guy to the front, like extend the front and put a guy on there, and then a platform on the back. We just sit in our seat, like, in the middle.
I just wonder what the safety precautions for movies like this is. It's like, all right, now when you're swinging, when you're rappelling down the fucking side of the rig, now don't fall under the wheel. You know, OSHA must be having a nightmare with this movie.
And they released one of those footage compilations in anticipation of the release of this movie, you know, where it's just a lot of it, some of it
like raw footage,
behind the scenes looking kind of stuff, and some of it doesn't have sound, but you know, you see, it might have been a stunt guy, I guess, but they strapped a Tom Hardy looking guy onto the front of that car and drove with him actually on it,
which that's another scene that was nerve-wracking the entire time, because as soon as you see how fast the War Boys' cars are getting like picked off and destroyed, and then they have the pursuing like Tusken Raiders, basically.
Yeah, I love
like
that.
You're like, how the hell is he going to make it out of this? He is Houdini'd to the front of a car,
chained. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like there's no way out, and yet it's something that this movie did that is why I love Breaking Bad so much. They managed to make the stakes seem impossibly high. Like, here's this situation, you are screwed, and there's no way out. And then they find a way out, and it's not contrived.
That's a kind of writing style where they, I want to give you a point, Michael, by the way. That's a kind of writing style where they intentionally don't think of the solution before they think of the problem.
Yeah.
They think of what is the worst thing that could happen to this character right now, and let's do that.
Yeah.
Okay, but now what?
And now we have to backtrack yeah. to get out.
Well, it's like
not backtrack.
Not backtrack, but like we have to come up with the solution. Yeah.
It's like a big rule is like make it hell for your main character, you know, make everything the worst thing, you know, that it could be.
They made everything the worst thing for everyone in
yeah,
this movie.
Yeah, that's true. Can I just say that there's a surprising amount of resilience from falling off of vehicles
yeah.
running at like 80 miles there an is. Hour.
Yeah, people
like,
just roll.
Nobody,
how many times does Nux...
I don't think anybody is even injured from falling. Like, if I don't see somebody get run over or shot in the head, I don't think they're
dead.
They're
fine, yeah. yeah.
Oh, pregnant lady just kind of fell under the wheel.
Jeez,
she's
whatever,
her?
You know.
She did.
Yeah, just like everybody was still alive. Yeah. So
I have a question about Nux that confused me in the theater. All right, so, you know, his car crashes and then Max is like set free-ish. He's like still chained to him, and then he has that whole scene with the wives, and then, you know, they escape and blah, blah, blah. Nux wakes up and cuts Max free. Like, Max tells him to, but why? And he's like happy to do it. He's like, yeah, man, that was really
cool.
Well,
I think he woke
why?
Up, he woke
he's
up,
the
he
blood.
Saw them fighting,
yeah.
and he assumed that
Max
he had already sort of been assimilated into the society, you know. Well,
but, like, he's his blood bank.
Yeah.
Yeah, but his priority, his mission was to apprehend Furiosa and the women.
I guess
and
I
so,
can chalk it up
sounds
to,
like a horrible band name.
Furiosa and the ladies. and so, you know, it's kind of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. They formed a temporary alliance.
Okay.
And it was kind of a forced temporary alliance because they were strapped together too. They had to work together in the fight.
Okay.
It was also very temporary.
Yes.
Up until later. Yeah. But I will say, like, Steven, you're right. Like, at that moment, I was kind of like, he should be a little more cautious. But he's also, they describe him as young and a little naive.
Yeah.
Nux, to be clear. But that fight, as soon as I saw that Max was carrying him on his back
Nux
with a
and
door.
The door yeah.
I was just like,
and a
something's,
shotgun.
I was like, something's gonna happen that's yeah. going to be awesome because like
a
you've got
shotgun
you got to fight with a chain and a door strapped to you, and a guy. So like the whole, you know, loading up the gun and like slamming it down on the ground while Nux holds the magazine and like just fist fighting and using the chain. That was one of the coolest, like, more believable, I guess, parts of the movie where just like it's not as high octane, but it's still so interesting to watch. And like, how would you fight if you had a chain and a door and a guy strapped to you?
That is an exhilarating scene, and it's one where I can really say they use the whole buffalo, you know, where
yeah.
just every little slapstick gag that they
yeah.
can think of to play with this chain and the door. Together and
yeah.
individually, and they do it.
And I was worried, you know, I was worried that it would just, oh, use the bolt cutter and get the chain off me, and that's it. But, and then they throw the door into the sand, and then nothing happens. Mm-hmm. But I was so glad that I was proven wrong, you know, because they needed to do that. They needed to have a fight scene with all of those things.
I think every scene, once the chase starts, has some sort of scuffle, if
yeah.
not like a full on action scene.
Yeah.
You know, like that was like a fight. The every time the car stops and they get out, like, they're under some sort of gunfire. Like Michael was saying, like, since it's a chase, like, the stakes are already high because you see them coming on the horizon, you know, they've got that mirage effect, and you're like, oh, they're getting close, and then like the gunfire hits and you're just like, oh geez, go now, please go.
Not this again.
Guys, I was making noises in the theater. It's really good you didn't come with
pew,
me.
Pew, like, pew.
Wait, even when there weren't any engines going on, in like the softer, quieter scenes, you were in the back going...
No, when there were no engines...
He was making up his own dialogue.
Yeah. No, I was pretending like I was in the car trying to get it started, so I was like... Hey, could you guys stop talking and help me out?
There seem to be people coming out of your butt.
Guys, it just killed like 5 guys.
Burgers?
Yeah.
And fries.
Aw.
No. What do we eat now?
Guess we'll go to Snackton.
Snackton. Don't forget to stop over in Slackton.
So I think Tom Hardy did a fine job, but I think Charlize Theron was the standout.
Yeah.
I thought Nicholas Holt was the standout.
Okay.
He was good, too.
You know what? Of all the characters, he's the only one that had an arc, really.
He is.
Yeah.
And that's why he stands out. Yeah, because Tom...
No, Max has an arc.
Barely. Like, it's...
Well, that's just, more of a...
It's huge for him, I would say.
Well, I haven't seen the other movies, so I don't know, like, what his personality is starting off, but I just interpreted it as, like I said before, what better... You're stranded in the middle of the desert. What choice do you have other than help these girls out?
But then at the end, he's about to ride away from them. And just go off and live his life again. But then he goes back. He goes back and says, "You know what would be a good idea? You went with my plan, and I come along and help you guys because you're my friends now." So.
Yeah, but I'd already like figured out that he was their friend. I couldn't understand that arc mainly because I hadn't seen the other movies. He keeps flashbacking to, like, is that his daughter that he keeps seeing or some girl that he let die?
That's actually something I wanted to bring up. So
maybe that arc couldn't translate to me because I didn't have that experience with it.
Well, I hadn't seen any of the other Mad Max movies either, and I was hoping to before I saw this one, but like Michael, I didn't have time.
I'm way busier than you, James.
Okay. but the whole flashback thing, I like that it wasn't clear who exactly, you know, because we're inside the mind of like a borderline insane guy. And
mad? Would you say?
Would I say mad? I would. But like, I was so glad that they didn't go with the whole, hold on, we need to have a dream sequence inside his brain sort of thing to get to know who these people are. Like, I'm totally content with just seeing flashes and images because ultimately it doesn't matter for that character. We just need to know that he's troubled.
It motivates him a little, and we don't know how.
Well,
but to me, we can make assumptions.
As an intelligent audience, we can make assumptions.
Right, we can. But another thing it adds
some
is
of
intrigue.
Us are an intelligent audience.
It adds intrigue. It actually made me a little bit more interested because of how much I like this movie.
But
to go back and watch the others.
Like, that's the thing. I want to go back and watch the other ones, but I didn't care who these people were. I just cared that they influenced Max.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mainly got like, he regrets some loss, like something he didn't do. And that's why he's going to help them out.
And you can make assumptions like maybe it is his daughter or somebody who he just took care of, you know.
Point, James.
Yes.
So that is an interesting thing. The fact that it was a girl in his hallucinations. Because in the original Mad Max movie, it is his son that gets killed. Mm. Which lends...
Oh, spoiler alert. For a movie that came out...
The beginning of the movie,
forever.
Too.
Yeah.
That's like the whole starting point for the...
Oh, does he say
now
that?
You're leading into the mythology, right?
Yeah.
This guy's daughter, the first guy's son.
Yeah, how...
Not necessarily the same Max.
Yeah, exactly. This in Road Warrior... In Road Warrior, it opens and closes with a narration of someone looking back on the events of Road Warrior as an older man and talking about the time when the Road Warrior came in and saved his town. Spoiler alert.
You can't say spoiler alert after you've said the thing.
So just listen to
Bruce
it backwards.
Bruce Willis is a ghost at the end of Sixth Sense.
Oh,
spoiler alert.
I sincerely hope you didn't just spoil that for somebody, because...
Oh, come on.
Okay,
everyone knows that.
That's like the biggest known twist in film
the
history.
I think we
the
just came up with a new
twist.
Word.
It's the
best.
The
best twist.
The best twist.
It's the best, yes.
So yeah, the fact that his child changes genders between the two movies.
I think that's the more likely scenario.
He had a kid who transitioned. No, but it lends credence to the idea that there are different Maxes in the different stories, that they're not necessarily named Max. It's just this tale that's been told.
The legend of Max.
Orally. It's this oral tale that's been handed down through the years, through the generations.
And that kind of would explain why he's someone who kind of floats in and out and stumbles in
exactly,
on things.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it totally lends to your like, yeah, it was in this town and this guy showed up. And
I'm not the Dread Pirate Roberts. My name is... Oh, wait, you guys... Princess Bride?
Go
yeah.
away.
Of course,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I was getting nothing, and I was like, oh, shit, did I say something?
I don't remember the quote exactly.
If you're
going to
quote...
Nerd, but...
If you're going to quote Princess Bride, you have to go with inconceivable.
Yeah,
or,
but that doesn't... Never
Hello,
mind.
My name is Diego Montoya.
What I'm trying
it doesn't
to,
have anything to do with...
If you're going to quote Princess Bride, just...
If you're going to quote Princess Bride, just don't
just
do
offer,
it.
Just offer a peanut. Just offer a peanut.
Anybody want a peanut?
See? I
get
it.
Pretty good.
I get it.
But if I had just said that
you
out of nowhere...
You sound like a French giant.
If I had said that out of nowhere, everybody would have been just like...
Yeah, I'll, t-
all right,
I'll take
so
one.
So anyway,
yeah.
Back to Mad Max. Mythology.
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of covered that point.
Yeah.
But I did want to talk about more about Furiosa and the women. And
no, Furiosa.
I don't know why I love
Furiosa
that label.
And the Breeders. That sounds that's a much better band name.
Well, there is a band called the Breeders.
Actually. Oh well, not Furiosa and the Breeders.
Well, it's like a joint tour now.
Yeah, it's Furiosa as a solo.
It's like
act.
Eminem and Rihanna
featuring the Breeders.
Featuring the Breeders.
Yeah.
So yeah, I want to. There's an article in the Daily Dot that talks about. Basically, it starts out talking about how. This movie has like a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. All the critics generally agree how amazing this movie is, which is not supposed to influence you guys at all, by the way.
You're just stupid if you dislike it.
Just to preface this, there was not everyone loved this movie. I guess there was a little bit of backlash from the Men's Rights Association.
You talked about this last
that
week.
I brought up last week. Here in this article in the Daily
that Club. Organization should not exist.
They're a joke in Parks and Rec. I thought it was completely made up, but I guess it's real. Ryan?
So, sorry, just brief excerpt of this article. On the popular and controversial pro-masculinity site Return of Kings, vlogger Aaron Clary opined that he'd been tricked into anticipating what is guaranteed to be nothing more than feminist propaganda that has ruined and rewritten the Mad Max franchise. Here's a quote. The truth is I'm angry about the extent Hollywood and the director of Fury Road went to trick me and other men into seeing this movie. Everything visually looks amazing. It looks like that action guy flick we've been desperately been waiting for, where it is one man with his principles standing against many with none, with no principles. And so yeah,
he's gonna love the new Ghostbusters.
What? It said Ghostbusters and Emma Stone and Melissa McCarthy and
Yeah, what do you guys think of that?
Girl power. I mean, this movie was great, and that's such a stupid opinion because
it
doesn't.
I'm sorry. Can you say girl power?
Girl
again?
Power. seriously, this movie, nothing made me feel weird about watching women be the ones that were kind of the most powerful roles.
I loved when they found what's supposed to be the green place at the end, and it's all these old women, and they're like the best sharpshooters.
So except the one was like, I never miss, and then I think every shot she takes in the actual action sequences,
every
she misses.
Every shot I've taken, headshot. She's just boastful.
She brags a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of this movie easily passes the Bechdel test within that scene, where it's just a group of older, definitely not Hollywood standard women.
Now, I know what that test is, but just for someone who doesn't.
The Bechdel test is passed whenever a movie or TV show or, you know, some form of media has two or more women in a conversation with each other where they don't mention a man.
Yeah, of course.
Is that? I hadn't heard that
really?
Before.
Yeah.
What an idiot.
It's... been circulating around
That's a harder thing to find than you would think.
No, oh, no, I totally understand
I had just never heard of that before, mm-hmm. but that's interesting. Now I'm like, every movie I watch, I'm going to be thinking about that.
I should point out, though, a lot of people use that as the end-all, be-all test.
Right.
And...
Well, I mean, like, it's unfair to assume.
It's like, just so you know, it's not the perfect test because 50 Shades of Grey passes the test. So don't let that be your end-all, be-all. Like, that's one of many factors
to consider.
It's not
the, you know, if something passes the Bechdel test, that doesn't make it a good movie automatically.
Yeah.
It's
I haven't seen it, but I never exactly heard that 50 Shades of Grey is misogynistic. It definitely deals in a certain culture of...
I don't know about that, actually.
Of male, or not necessarily male dominance, but one person being dominant, and usually it's the male. But that doesn't mean it's misogynist, because those are roles that both people consensually play.
Sure.
Anyways, right. That's a completely different thing.
Guys, sounded like you're defending
seen,
your...
who hasn't seen 50 Shades of Grey?
I haven't, and I don't want to.
I haven't.
Me neither.
I don't think any of us have.
No. Just that said.
We'll keep it.
What have we been living under a rock?
Well, if you've seen Twilight, you've apparently seen 50 Shades of Grey. Anyway,
I haven't.
To go back to the article you were quoting, I can kind of see, like, when he says I was tricked into, like, this feminist movie and it's propaganda, I'm not like, feminist movie propaganda, but I do see where he's like, okay, this is Mad Max.
Well,
and then the movie's about Furiosa.
Well,
I thought
like,
she was really cool, though. But
a lot
like,
of the
I
advertisement was sort of more focused on Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
But
I think
he
that's
plays
just
a,
advertising.
Yeah.
But that, and that's also just, hey, the name of the movie is Max. Here's Max.
Here's Max. He's mad.
But
about
then
something.
The movie title also has Fury in it, so you can expect
some
Fury.
I liked that because I in the theater I was like, wait, why is it called Mad Max? Oh, Fury Road, Furiosa. What they did there.
But I mean, at this point, Mad Max being in the title is more just letting you know, hey, it's a part of this established franchise, more than it is, hey, this movie's about this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like in the advertisements, sure, it's shown that, you know, like Mad. That Max is sort of like playing a bigger role than he might actually be playing in the movie. But if you look at all of the posters and all the billboards and everything like that,
she's
almost always
there, yeah.
front in front of him.
Well, it's usually like the side shot of the rig
with
her in the front seat, and then you see Max is kind of in the background.
Yeah.
Like,
so in that sense, in the like still image advertisement, they technically weren't lying about it, you know, like I don't know if lying is the
word, it shouldn't matter.
It's
a freaking movie and it's about what it's about.
You shouldn't feel misled because you went into a movie expecting one thing and got another. I mean, like, that happens all the time, but this just happened to be mainly about which sex was the predominant one.
But then also quite often the people who make the movie, the creative, they don't have a say in how the movie is marketed.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
That's up to the studio. So the studio may be like, oh, man, action star sells more, they push that. Now I don't watch trailers. I have seen the print versions where Charlize Theron is in the foreground, so I can't comment on the trailer. But like, just because it's marketed one way, you should kind of be able to expect that it's not necessarily going to be the exact same thing. And it shouldn't, I don't think your expectations of a movie should stop you from judging it in a vacuum. Like,
well,
it's still the same movie.
You could argue also in one sense that Tom Hardy is still that person that what's their organization?
Men's rights
guys want him to be, is like this stoic, quiet, soft-spoken but badass dude. It's not like they changed his character or anything like that. He still is that character. And Charlize Theron happens to be a more compassionate person, but she's just as much, if not more, of a badass.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
She cares about these people.
Not just herself,
which is what Max is, which is what a lot of 80s and guy action movies characters are.
Well, and another thing is, what do they want? Do they want him to just be the white knight and he's the one who saves the day and the women are incapable of standing up for themselves? Because then what does that say? Because one guy can save so many women.
Six
but
or
you,
seven.
You have like a large cast of women. Of course, they're going to all pull their weight. And I don't necessarily think any other than Furiosa, any female character outshines Max. It's just collectively.
I was expecting
the women are very active. Even like I thought a lot of the wives would just be like, all right, these are bodies you got to protect. But they're doing stuff like using them. They're like
reloading
body
shields, very active, and tricking the
other guys. Like, oh, here, come help me, save me, and then tricks him when he's on the enemy. She's on the enemy car. Like they all get really into it.
I love that part specifically because it kind of subverted my expectations. Because whenever she did that, I was like, oh, she's the weak one, you know?
Yeah.
But then she...
She helps them all out now that she's on the other...
Also, I'm like, wow, that was amazing. That's
well, cool. I was worrying about that too, that they were just going to be damsels to be protected.
I was just about to say that. The damsel in distress is such an outdated notion now.
But like you were saying, they pull their weight, and I was surprised at how knowledgeable they were about like...
Guns and
like I see enemy units and like they called out the units. I was like, I thought they had spent like their entire life in a safe. What happened here? Like, I guess he just taught them stuff.
It might not have been realistic for them to be that active, but it's surely.
But I was glad
they were.
Yeah,
yeah. It made for a much more compelling movie because way more of the characters were active in it.
It also could have just been that they're smart though, and they're around Furiosa for this amount of time, and they kind of pick up on it.
Mm. Yeah. I want to. It'll segue too far, so I guess I'll just that would be my last thoughts on it. I don't know. Old women kick butt. I'm looking at my notes.
What happens
to Max after? I like that it's different than other blockbusters this year. I do actually. I'm glad this isn't like another comic book.
I did want to say that I was rooting for a love story, and you did get like a little hint here and there. Between Max and Furiosa, even though I know it was a trope, and even though I knew it was like, I was like, oh man, I shouldn't want this, but I do between the two characters.
Did you get love story or just
affection?
Companionship. Yeah, I just saw more.
Right. But there was like a hint, especially when he does the quickie transfusion and he's like, hey, and that's like the first time he speaks softly to somebody.
It was such a weird. In a good way, when he's talking soft and quick.
And I mean, maybe it's not love, but it's like there's a connection there. And I was just like, even though I knew that it was like such a trope, I kind of still wanted it. Well, and then I saw him go off into the distance. I was like, you're right. It's better this way.
He's a loner.
I actually viewed that transfusion of like being like the most symbolic thing in the movie of like, here, you have my blood. We're equal. Like,
I
dug that.
I just saw that as he's saving someone. I wish his car didn't blow up. That's my last thought.
I wanted him
to get his car back. I wanted him in the middle of that chase scene to get in his car and then contribute with his car. Be like,
Yeah, he's very protective of that car in the original trilogy, too. So
that's mine. And that's my jacket.
And his jacket as well.
Well,
shit. One last thing. The boot. He gave him the boot. That was a nice little moment.
Yeah, that was a fun little gag.
Yeah, that's it.
Everyone gets 2 points for that last round of discussion.
Yay!
What's the point then?
Shut up.
let's rate it. I guess I'll start because you kind of knew my feelings going into this, but it's one of my favorite movies of the past several years, and it's in my mind kind of the perfect. It's not just a summer blockbuster. It's just an excellent film.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch. Super interesting. A lot of really cool themes. Very well written and nuanced. And I'm going to give it an A+.
All right. Echo. A+.
Cool.
I'll go next. Really solid movie. I did think it was light on the plot and light on the character arcs. Those were my main vices. It was super intense though, and the story kept moving forward, and they did a great job of just making every scene a mini movie, and that there's like so many scuffles and action scenes, like I said before. So with those faults in mind, I'm gonna go with an A-.
This is a movie.
The end.
This is a movie, the end. This is a movie, and I love it when movies do this and TV shows do this, and I said it right before we started recording, actually. This is a movie that knows exactly what it is, and so seemed to have almost none of that like studio executive bullshit that like George Miller probably still had to wade through, but like it's such one man's idea come to life. Mm-hmm. And I love it when that happens, and it's a miracle when that happens. So despite the fact that it's a masterpiece, that's like my highest thing. I'm going to have to give it an A+.
So it's like a passion thing that you're talking about. Like with Miami Connection.
Yeah.
High five.
I will give Miami Connection a high five, yes.
So that's going to leave us at an A.
Yay!
Cool. All right.
It's a good partner. Keep on rolling, baby. You know what time it is.
I was pretty much live streaming that movie when I was in the theater yesterday. But instead of live streaming, I was just texting Ryan my thoughts.
I was like, all right, good. He likes it.
Oh, thank God.
So, yeah, Michael, do you want to give us a quick recap of the points as we go into the...
Steven has 0 points. He broke even. James has 5 and I have 3.
Challenge.
What's our challenge, Ryan? Well, I'll tell you, Ryan.
What's our challenge, Ryan?
Well, I'll tell you, Michael.
What's our challenge, Ryan?
Well, I'll tell you, James.
Okay. What's our challenge, Ryan?
Well, I won't tell you, Steven.
Oh. Minus a point.
We are now putting Steven in a soundproof booth as Ryan explains the challenge to me and James.
So I was talking a little bit about the mythology of Mad Max and how it's not necessarily the same person that's going town to town performing all these incredible acts. So what I want you guys to do is continue the story, continue the myth of the Road Warrior in whatever way seems best to you. With, you know, just tell me a story as if you were narrating it based on your previous experience from 50 years ago with the Road Warrior.
Okay.
And who would like to start?
I'll try it. I'm going to try it.
Go for it.
But I'm going to bring in a guest narrator. I remember when I first met Max Dufresne. He was a strong man here in Shawshank. I was a man that could get you things, but Max, he was a guy who could get things done. And I remember he was imprisoned by the bad guys.
I don't really remember what they're called.
I don't remember what they're called. It was 50 years ago, and I'm old. And now all I do is talk about penguins marching. And God, what a legend he was. He fought off the fairies more often than not. But I think he actually did the crime. He waded through a tunnel of shit to get to his freedom, and that was really cool. Used just a rock to chip away at his prison cell underneath the Rita Hayworth poster, and did the warden's taxes for some reason. And that's Max Dufresne.
Excellent, excellent narrating, Michael. I can tell you had some inspiration.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you 5 points for that.
Good job, Morgan.
I'll go.
You can leave now.
Wait, do I get the points for it, or did Morgan?
Morgan.
It was mostly Morgan pulling his weight.
All right.
Watch Morgan win.
Morgan Freeman. I remember Max when he rolled into town. You notice a new face anytime anybody rolls up in this desert city. See, me and my family, we're water hoarders. There's not much in the desert, so whatever you get is the most valuable thing you can find. But I want it out. I want to get out of there. See, they killed my uncle and aunt. And the only way out was Max. He had the fastest car around. Built it himself. It looked like a piece of junk, though. Anyways, he said he had to get away from some bounty hunter, so he was more than happy to oblige. He took us out away, and we found some princess somewhere, and then we rescued her, and then you know, he got his money and he ran. What did I expect, Max? He was always in for himself and no one else. But
Just when things would get their worst, just when all hope was lost, that's when Max would come back and swoop in and save the day. I remember it clearly when he said, "Yahoo! You're all clear, kid. Now let's blow this thing and go home." It was a desert star. Yes. We blew up the sand star.
I thought it was a desert star.
My memory's a little hazy, Morgan. It's been 50 years. And then he made out with my sister, that Max.
He was kind of scruffy looking, though.
A little stuck up.
Yeah. We'll call
scruffy?
Him a nerf.
Wait,
herder.
Who's scruffy looking?
We'll call him a nerf herder. He herded lots of like soft balls.
All right.
Plush balls. Nerf herder. He was herding nerfs.
Right. Didn't know where you were going with that for a second.
Steven, that was a pretty good narration. I think it took you a little too long to get to the point, though. I was like, where is he going with this?
How quick till you figured out what I was doing?
Not quick enough, I guess.
I figured it out before you started because
yeah,
I know
what
it
is.
Okay, that's fair. I'm going to give you 3 points.
All right. Not bad.
All right, James.
Okay. For the most part, I'm going to be referring to Max as the kid, as I'm trying to affect a certain way of speaking.
Oh, I know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, I want to give you a disclaimer that if you manage to get -1 point, Morgan wins.
Oh, okay. And then he chooses
then
what,
he
the
will
movie?
Choose the
okay.
next movie.
You want to hear another story about Max? Well, I could tell you a couple of stories. Way back, first met him, starved. Left for dead out in the middle of the road. We picked him up on our caravan. Figured we were heading to Bullet Town. Could use an extra man, just in case things get hairy. I remember we got in one tussle later on, further down the road. Max had recovered his strength. Well, we were attacked by a raggedy band, and we didn't know what to do. We were running low on fuel. Running low on guns, running low on everything. Well, that's when the kid gets this idea, right? Grabs this knife, takes one of them right off of their car, slits his throat, opens up his guts, takes his intestines out, whips them around the hood ornament, swings through and does a sort of like triple axel thing, I don't know.
Kicks an ice skating move?
Kicks five of them in the head, all getting around the hood. It was crazy. Man, you should have seen it. I'm not being as eloquent as I was a second ago because the action was that intense. But anyways, I could tell you many stories about the kid, but that one always sticks true. Good old Max. Wonder whatever happened to him. Oh yeah, that's right. He made out with that guy's sister.
and he also ended up
This is my story. This is my story now.
No, he started a town that hoards pants, and I actually need to go there.
You need to get some slacks. Slacks. Tying it back.
I see what you're doing.
Way to go.
I just showed them all my dick.
James, that was great. I like how you... Or, sorry, Rux. That was great. You really picked a narrator that resonated with me personally, so... Good job on you. You know how to play the game.
Yes.
But it worked out.
Yes.
I also like you really succeeded in where I was trying to lead you to get to, where adapting this narrator persona, but then making up like a wild story and trying to tell like a huge action set piece just with your words only.
Unfortunately, I kind of faltered there at the end. But
yeah, that's cool. I'm going to give you 7 points for
Oh,
that.
Shit. Nice.
Michael, where does that leave us?
Steven with 3 points.
Woo!
The team of me and Morgan Freeman with 8 points. And James with 12 points.
All right, whoa. James.
Flawless victory.
Killed it. It wasn't flawless. It was, they got points.
It was a good victory.
But pretty
it,
good.
It
victory.
Is a victory nonetheless. Congratulations,
yay!
James.
Go, James.
I'm happy
we
with
have
that.
Like 1 week golf clap at your victory from Ryan.
James, what's your pick for next week?
My pick for next week is...
Your nose.
Close. My pick next week is going to be Akira or Akira.
Oh, nice.
Which I'm pretty sure you haven't seen, Michael.
I haven't.
You haven't seen it,
I've been wanting to.
Have you seen it? Nope. Okay, nobody's seen it. Cool.
Pretty good victory.
Pretty good victory. Akira is a movie, an anime movie from the 80s. One of the first, I think, like feature-length movies that was that well done. I'm sorry, there's some faucets going on in the background. It's a fantastic movie. And I actually kind of goes with the, not post-apocalyptic, but more of a cyberpunk sort of thing. And the question...
Which has nothing to do with Mad Max.
Well, I mean, like, sort of like a grungy...
Yeah.
You know what I mean. My question for you guys is...
And by you guys, we mean our listeners.
Yes.
The Fornatics.
My question...
That wasn't bad.
For the Fornats is...
How is that better? How is that better?
I'm drawing a blank here.
Well, okay, we can...
I'll give you time to think.
Yeah.
That episode is going to come 2 weeks from now, though.
Right.
Because next week, we are going to have a special guest
on. Right, and good pick, James, because we're going to keep it in anime territory for a couple weeks now. So next week... Oh, my gosh. I love how much Michael and Ryan hate anime. But it's because they know my pick. Next week,
Are we comparing Akira to Sailor Moon?
Oh, is that what we're doing? My thunder. next week.
Either way, I'm going to be sick next week. It's
good. That's the way we have someone to replace
guys,
you.
I can't podcast this week.
No one can replace me.
Morgan kind of did.
Okay.
Next week, we are having Megan Camarena from the Strawberry 17 YouTube channel come in and review Sailor Moon R, the movie, which is also known as Sailor Moon, The Promise of the Rose.
Both of those are bad titles.
I like Promise of the Rose. I think
Sailor Moon R.
It's a rated. Well,
that's just grammatically incorrect.
The first movie was like Sailor Moon S, I think.
No, that's the second.
Oh.
Like Sailor Moon R, the movie, sounds like IR Baboon.
Okay, if you really want the full. R stands for Returns, so it's Sailor Moon Returns, the movie.
Then just make it that.
Sailor Ship Returns with the Rose for Promises, right?
Who told you the plot? Anyways, we're watching that next week. So the question for next week I want you guys to answer is, who is your favorite Sailor Scout? Very simple. If you ever watch the show, I know you've already got an answer. So that could be the one you think is most like you, or the one you want most want to be, or just your favorite.
Uranus.
Let me know.
The one that was a lesbian in the Japanese one, but isn't in the American one.
Sailor Uranus. Yeah. Good pick, Michael. I thought you didn't know the show.
I know it in my mind.
All right, so send us those questions, and Megan will be joining us for that episode. It should be a very good one, because she's a huge fan.
I still got nothing.
Write us in fbarock@gmail.com.
Well, you got a week to figure it out.
Yeah,
you can announce it.
Yeah, we'll
tack it on.
Just do like an obvious voiceover on the
And here's James with...
The weather.
You can write us in fuarock@gmail.com, tweet us at fuarockpodcast, check out our Facebook, facebook.com/fromunderarock, and there will be the challenge highlight video going up on Thursday of this week, on youtube.com/hyperdrivepics. Along with other great content such as...
Power Rangers Essentials is back. We just had the first episode this past week, and I'm just going to keep churning those out. Thanks for leaving the nice comments on that.
Like
by the way,
butter.
Guys.
All right, that sounds great, Steven.
Yay! Thumbs ups.
If you want to, you can go on iTunes and rate and subscribe to us. Give us 5 stars if you like us.
4 stars isn't bad either. 3 stars is average. You know that.
And so on, etc.
Great.
Yeah.
That'll do it, right?
Great. Yeah. I'm really happy that you guys liked Mad Max Fury Road. And I'm glad I got to talk about it with you guys.
They're motorcycles. That's the connection.
Cool.
Oh, that was your question.
No, motorcycles. Motorcycles in Akira. Motorcycles
there are
in
motorcycles?
Mad Max. That's the connection. That's the question.
There are. It's just a yes or a no.
There are motorcycles? Or, yeah, James.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God.
All right, guys. Well, that'll do it for another episode of From Under a Rock. But let's go around for a final roll call. I am Michael Ornelas.
You're so bad at this.
A.K.A. Mike Bourbon. I'm mixing it up, okay? Mixing it up. To my left is...
I'm James McAnally, A.K.A. McDoodle.
To his left is...
Ryan Evans.
Now to your right, his left.
To Ryan Evans' left, my right, across from James.
Across from me.
Someone diagram out the table based off those instructions. I'm Steven Zarita, a.k.a. Steven Stupin, Suburban the Burbs, Suburban Zarita the Jerk. Boom.
Thank you once again for joining
us.
For
rock, rock, rock.
Oh,
rock,
my gosh. Rock.